Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, a Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the mighty Michelle Shepherdson, the judicious John Robinson, and the stupendous Sam G. Today we have myself, Ange, along with Jared and special guest host Andy Jaksetic, and today we're going to talk about running superhero RPGs and some of the unexpectedly trickier aspects of these kinds of games. First up, Andy, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. My name is Andy Jaksetic, as Anne mentioned. I am the event organizer for Matinee Adventures, a GM group that runs games at Origins Game Fair and UConn in Ohio and Michigan, respectively. I'm also a cast member of the Untold Story Project, which is an actual play for Mutants and Masterminds. So I have extensive experience with superhero RPGs.
Before we dive into our main topic, we're going to ask a get to know a gnome and guest question. What's one of the most ridiculous comic book superhero things you've ever seen happen in a role-playing game?
I was running a DC Adventures game, and it was pretty long-running. The Justice League were nowhere to be found. Our intrepid heroes were defending the Fortress of Solitude against Zod, and one of the player characters, while defending the Fortress of Solitude, blew up a Kryptonium power crystal while there was a lava overflowing into the Fortress of Solitude. We were playing with the more lethal optional rules that were in the GM's guide for Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition. It's still not real easy to kill someone with those, but we did. Myrmidon got blown up in this gigantic explosion, goes flying out of the Fortress of Solitude. Necromancer, who was another one of our characters, goes hurtling after him, pumps energy back into him, and raises him. And Myrmidon is very upset that he killed him. Necromancer says, "I brought you back to life. That's like I never killed you in the first place, right?"
Andy, what about you? What's the most ridiculously superhero thing you've seen happen in an RPG?
Oh, gosh. I think there's a bit too many to count, but spoilers for the end of the Nether War modules for Green Ronin for Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition. We're fighting the big, bad, dark magic entity that has decided to take hold of Freedom City and is plunging all of reality into her own dark universe. The only way for us as the player characters in this game specifically to beat her was for there to be a sacrifice. There was supposed to be the heroic sacrifice. When we went around the table, unbeknownst to all of the rest of us, we were asked individually by the GM who you put out as the sacrifice. We all put our own names forward. Not a single person said somebody else, which is very super heroic in and of itself. Then came the fortitude save, as portions of our life energy were sucked out of us, and three of the six of us rolled natural 20s. And the GM's just like, "Well, I guess I'm not destroying anybody of this group tonight."
For me, I actually thought of one that I'm not going to use, because while it was comic book, I wouldn't call it super heroic, because it involved chaos in a hospital trying to get information about somebody who was hurt by a monster in the wilderness. And as a distraction, our brick basically threw a van through the hospital lobby. It was chaos. It was pure chaos. The one I am actually going to call out is I ran Masks at Gen Con in 2017, and Masks is teenage superheroes. They had discovered that there was somebody stealing artifact level superhero gear from the older generation of superheroes. And so the kids were basically trying to track these down and find them. They finally track them down. The big bad is there. He's basically using these artifacts to basically channel and to get unlimited power and all that. And the kid who was playing the legacy, who's, you know, it was his father's, I don't know, it was like magic staff or something like that. He's like, "I need to do this." And he reached out and grabs the staff. And I'm like, "Oh no, you know, like the power is too much for you to handle." And one by one, every single player reached out and grabbed somebody's hand. And they basically defeated the bad guy by holding hands through friendship, a la Guardians of the Galaxy. It was such an amazing moment to watch them all just do that and have this moment be like so spectacular for them. So if you've listened to any of the podcasts I've hosted, you might be aware of the idea that I like comic book superhero RPGs. My co-hosts today are the same. So I thought it would be a good topic to get together and chat about the ins and outs of running superhero games. Now, the first thing to talk about is how they tend to be talked about like they're all the same thing, like there's some monolithic thing, but there's actually a wide array of styles that get lumped into this category. We're first going to talk about the different types of superhero games. So let's start just each taking a turn and naming a type of superhero game. Jared, you start.
If you're going to be watching Disney Plus anytime soon, you're going to see a good example of this with Daredevil Born Again, but you have the street-level superhero game where your heroes are exceptional compared to other human beings, but you're still going to get beat up. Matt gets beat up so much. And but they can still accomplish things that a normal person couldn't. And a lot of times you're going to be going up against regular people, and when you do run up against the bad guys, it's usually... when you do run up against somebody that has powers or abilities, it's usually either the main villain or that villain's like hired assassin, like, you know, Kingpin sending Bullseye after Daredevil.
Yeah, usually it's you're protecting your neighborhood, your city. You're not protecting the world type of thing.
Even though you might be by keeping somebody out of power.
True, very much. And like, you know, we Peter Parker is always the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, but Spider-Man goes a lot of places.
Yes, really does.
Andy, you pick another one.
I want to talk vigilante. So we're talking here like Batman or Young Justice or something along those lines, where you're the crew that's not sanctioned by the government. You're the crew that basically just wants to go out and do good because you've had experiences that basically mean that bad people shouldn't get away with the things they get away with. So you're either, if you're talking, you know, Batman, the animated series, you're a single superhero protecting a city or a group of superheroes protecting a city after a certain point, of course. Or you're like Young Justice, where you're still a group of vigilantes. You have a little bit of leeway with the government, but you're doing a lot of behind the scenes covert activities to try to bring the bad guys down or make them overplay their hand. It's not the I'm going to go to the door, knock and say I'm here to fight Lex Luthor type of thing. It's I'm going to collect all of this evidence that paints him in a horrible light and actually shows exactly what he's done wrong and then present it to the world along with the point of time of him showing his true face.
I think there are some crossovers between street level and vigilante, but
absolutely.
I do think they have a different feel.
They do to a certain degree. I mean, street level, you've got the vigilanteism that goes along with it too. But when you think of vigilante, you really do think of like Batman and his cohorts, the Bat family, Green Arrow, those kind of people.
And you do kind of have a spectrum because you can go from your Marvel Knights characters who are more toned down in what they can accomplish when they're all getting together, which is essentially what the Defenders were on Netflix. And then you have the other end, which is like the outsiders from like the 80s when Batman said the Justice League has to follow too many rules. I'm going to find all of these other superheroes with a chip on their shoulder and we're going to go accomplish things and get Markovia back.
Speaking of the Justice League, let's talk about the sanctioned group. This is your Justice League, your Avengers. These are groups that are, you know, whether or not they are sanctioned by the government, they have an organization and rules that they follow. They have a support system built in for how they function and how they work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the groups, when you get to that group level, I mean, X-Men, Avengers, Justice League, you don't get invited to the party unless you're willing to play by the rules that are set, and you break those rules and you're out.
Yep.
And that is kind of part of the fun of that sanction thing is, whether it's, you know, 1980s, you know, Henry Peter Gyrick coming to the Avengers and saying you have to cut yourselves down to 7 members or you lose your government sanctioning, or the actual, you know, Markovia Accords and Sokovia Accords in, you know, the MCU movies, that having to jump through hoops and negotiate things so that you're not on the wrong side of the law because you do have all of this kind of writing on the fact that you are an official group is kind of part of the fun of that, too.
Go ahead with another one, Jared.
I was going to mention Cosmic, and Cosmic can go two directions, because Cosmic can be like big space opera type superheroes, but it can also be like magical heroes that go through weird dimensions that don't look anything like Earth. So this could be Thor, you know, traveling through, you know, Hela's domain, fighting off hordes of undead, and then using the Bifrost to get back home. Or it could be the Guardians of the Galaxy forming to help fight off the annihilation wave of starships that Annihilus is trying to use to destroy the matter universe with the antimatter universe.
Some of what Doctor Strange gets into with all of his interdimensional stuff, and Legion of Superheroes from DC, or the Lantern Corps, where you've got big, powerful people up in space, or some other universe doing big, powerful things. Andy, you want to pitch another one?
Out of the list we've got here, I mean, Dark and Gritty, we talking things like Spawn. When we really get into that, I mean, Punisher. Spawn, Punisher. We're talking more adult themes, more violence, more.
Yeah,
it's the best way to, I mean, it's the best way to put it. And I have never played a Dark and Gritty game, because a Dark and Gritty game requires a certain level of buy-in from the players.
Yeah,
and it requires a lot of. I mean, you'd have to do this with a really good group of friends that have all agreed that they know when to stop, when they're told to stop.
Yeah.
And that the game has a very predefined set of rules that they have to work within.
Yeah, I think if you play with a group that's not mature enough to handle this type of game, you're going to end up with the same problem you end up with when you have an quote-unquote evil game and they just do stuff to be stupid and evil. And
because
it's like,
I'm evil.
Well, yes, exactly.
I was going to say, some of the most enjoyable for me stories with Punisher are where you realize Frank does not think he is a good person. It's not the, unfortunately, late 80s, early 90s Punisher where it's like, yeah, everybody loves me. Guns are great. I'm going to blow up everybody. It's this whole idea that Frank wants to stop, but he doesn't know anything else to do anymore.
The opposite of Dark and Gritty, we've got Four Color. Four Color is, you know, most people think of it as like an older style of comic book superhero. It's the Superman of the 50s and 60s. It's the Fantastic Four of the 60s. It's this bright, colorful, hopeful. The violence is all just very, very sanitized. But it's that over-the-top comic book style that I think, you know, we all think of when we think of Four Color.
Super Friends is also a good example.
Yes, yes.
More recently, Batman Brave and the Bold.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I think one of the final notes to say on this discussion of the different styles of superhero games is that if you listen to what we were saying, there can be crossover between these. It's an interesting blending, and you have to be careful of how you blend them, because if you try... Well, let's move on to the next aspect of this conversation. Why do we have to define what kind of superhero game we're running?
So, just like what you were saying, you can mix maybe two, maybe three of those different styles together in a campaign and get them to work. But if you start doing too much, then nobody knows who they are, what kind of game they're playing. You know, it becomes this game where you have Thor and Punisher and... and Bug from the Micronauts, you know, you're like, I don't know what we're doing here. So it is good to kind of manage expectations, to know where your boundaries are at.
Yeah.
I also think it's good because sometimes when you define a certain style, it does give you the leeway to deviate from that style once in a while. And that's a nice shock to the system. Like, you know, I remember Tony, there's a issue of Iron Man where he has to fight Morgan Le Fay by himself without the rest of the Avengers. Great thing, you know, fish out of water. They're like, this is not what Tony does. He does not deal with magic, and he has to figure out what he's supposed to do in this situation.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts, Andy?
I mean, I've been through a lot of mixing of the genres. I mean, never to the degree of like Four Color and Dark and Gritty. Those are two that like oil and water.
don't mix those two.
Don't mix those two. It's a bad idea. The campaigns that I've been in, because we did Nether War on the network, and then we went into what Alex called the multiverse of the Master Mage. And so we went from a relatively interesting kind of world-hopping introduction to magic and everything like that, to now the entire multiverse is open and you're just kind of going everywhere. But when you do something like that, you got to make sure your players are all on the same page. I mean, if you've got like a Captain Marvel style character and a Hawkeye, kind of to Jared's point, you'd need to know how those characters are going to interact with the challenges that you're going to put in front of them.
If you mix kind of characters from these different types of stories, you can end up with a real mismatch in power levels and what they can do. And a good player can take Hawkeye and still be a badass in the story of that game. But a player who's uncertain, not sure how the rules work, uncertain about what they can do, they're going to feel so outclassed by somebody playing Captain Marvel and just blasting moons out of the sky.
Yep. That is the one problem you run into if you're running a superhero game at a convention or something along those lines. Yeah. If a player isn't familiar with the rules and you put the character sheet down in front of them, especially if it's something a little more, I'm not going to say crunch, but a little bit more robust, like Mutants and Masterminds, because there's so much on that character sheet, especially if you print it off from Hero Lab and you're looking at it. And if you don't know the rules and not everything's quite spelled out in exactly the format that it needs to be, you're going to sit there and go, oh, what the heck do I do? And then when you get into a challenge and you see that player A, who's playing Captain Marvel per se, is just downing enemies one after one, and you're Hawkeye going, I have a stick and twine. What do I do here? Players tend to conflate their experience with how many bad guys they take out in a convention game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I had a great time because I blasted through 400 minions and got the last hit on Darkseid. Yay. So if they're that power level and you got Hawkeye and Hawkeye got to do none of that, Hawkeye's not going to have a good game. So that's where making sure that everybody has, they know exactly what they can do and how what they do helps everybody else at the table.
One of the things I like about mixing some of this is if you have all of the player characters kind of on the same level, but then the GM mixes in like villains from other types of things. A while back, a friend ran we jokingly put quote marks around this street level campaign, and he threw us up against Loki, Mephisto, just these much higher level bad guys. And we would just look at him and go, yeah, sure, Paul, it's a street level game. But it was a fantastic campaign and it really worked well. All the characters were kind of on the same playing field, but our adversaries were like a tier up from where we expected. So what are some of the other problems you can run into with superhero games?
One of the big things that I feel we run into a decent amount of times is having enough stuff for all the characters to do.
Mm-hmm.
There are very clearly situations where if you have a high mage in your party, and I mean high mage in terms of like, this is your primary caster, this is your Doctor Strange, this is your Doctor Fate, and magic is what they do. And maybe you have somebody else on the team that is very much like the next step down from that level. You know, maybe a Wong, or not to say John Constantine is a step down from Doctor Fate, but he kind of is in terms of the amount of magic he can do. But Doctor Fate's type of magic is different than Constantine's. And technically, while Doctor Strange and Wong do the same type of magic, they don't do the same type of things with their magic.
Right.
So you kind of want to make sure that there's something for them to do, even if the scene would pretty much call for the high mage to handle the problem, right?
Yeah.
You don't want it to just be, well, Doctor Strange comes in and does his expertise magic and the situation is solved and doesn't let the other person in the group do anything. And then by the same token, if the rest of your party aren't mages and you come up with a magic problem, they need some way to contribute versus just being like, well, I guess we're just waiting on Dr. Fate to figure out the problem.
Yeah, it's kind of the cyberpunk Decker problem.
Yes.
Where you want to be careful about having a scenario in front of the players that only one character can interact with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's kind of interesting because as you were talking about that, I'm thinking of like the Bat Family and running a scene where you need to gather information and just seeing how each member of the Bat Family gathers information differently, because you know, you'll have Jason Todd out there beating the crap out of somebody to get them to talk about things. You might have Nightwing, you know, sneaking into a place to, you know, spy on somebody. And you might have Barbara hacking into their computers to get information off of them.
That's a good reference of like the 2-2-2 scenario, too, because Batman and Nightwing would probably do the stealth investigations. Jason and Damian would probably do the beat people over the heads intimidation thing. And Tim and Barbara would do the hacking. So, you know, having that setup where two characters are good at things allows more people to do things.
One of the other things I'll point out with the different powers that characters can have is sometimes your players will be smarter than you are. This is something I ran into the first campaign I ever ran. I had a player who, I adore this player. It's TJ. I adore him. He is incredibly smart. He was playing a character with cosmic power. He could do anything. And I was not prepared for him to be able to do anything. And there were so many times it was a very good learning experience for me as a new GM, because he's a great player. He's very supportive for me as a GM, but he is incredibly smart and he's going to keep me on my toes. And in a superhero game, there are times when if you truly lean into it to support the players enjoying a comic book superhero game, they're going to think of doing things you didn't think they were going to think of, and you're going to have to scramble to adapt to that.
Had a lot of that over the years of running in Alex's superhero games. We had one where the issue was a mage had been killed, and if he wasn't resurrected in 24 hours, all of reality was going to go kaput. And we had just saved a Native American deity of the dead, or at least, you know, put things back so that he could do the things that he did. And my character, when we found out what had happened, I'm just like, well, why don't we just take the body to the god and to the god of the dead and ask him to revive them as the favor he owes us for for saving him. And it's like, oh yeah, I guess you can do that.
Also, Mutants and Masterminds is a good example of this too, because you can stunt a power where you basically are on the fly building something that would make sense that your power could do that it doesn't normally do. And I did this to my GM because I was playing a character that was basically an angel that was sent to observe superheroes. And I did a stunt off of his, you know, his celestial immortality power set so he could heal somebody. So, you know, while that person was healing, I was completely mortal during that time. But it is something that, you know, I did not build this character to be a healer. It was just something that kind of came up on the fly because I started, you know, trying to figure out what I could do in that situation.
One of the other things I'll say can be a problem with superhero games is GMs who don't understand how to blend the combat of superhero games with the rest of the story. I for a while, I stopped playing superhero games at cons because I had too many experiences where I showed up to the table and it was a 3-hour and 45-minute slog of combat the entire session. And there was never any of the role-playing and the pathos and the story that you're supposed to get in superhero games. And it can be very easy to get caught up in just planning out the combats. And your mileage may vary. Some people may only want to get in there and just punch bad guys and minions and get to go home and say they took out 400 minions. But not everyone likes that. And, you know, it's something to be careful of when you're running a superhero game or campaign.
I think another thing that comes up is that superhero stories can be very reactive. The old thing of the superhero monitoring the police band to hear if something happens or patrolling the city. It's like, they're doing something, but something has to happen before they activate and go do what they're supposed to be doing. And if you want it to be more than just reacting to whatever villain shows up, like they stop Rhino from robbing the bank, you have to maybe sometimes feel like you're being a little heavy-handed to let them know, no, Rhino robbing the bank was a distraction and Norman Osborn is stealing something from one of Tony's R&D development places. So now you have to start doing research and looking around the facility and finding out this stuff so that now it's more on you it's not as directed by the GM throwing stuff at you and you reacting to it.
Let's talk about, does it make a difference if you're running canon or original characters or canon or original settings? Because I think, Andy, you've kind of played in both.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I know I've played in both. I know all of us have played in canon-specific settings with canon-specific characters. So, Andy, what are your thoughts here?
It really depends on what you're looking for in a superhero game. I mean, I love getting the chance to play my favorite superheroes from DC and Marvel when I get the chance to play a Marvel, my favorite Marvel character, which is not very often because up until recently, there's never been a lot of Marvel superhero games that have been available at conventions and stuff of that nature. That's one of the fun things is like taking an established character, taking what you know about them and stepping into the world that the GM has prepped and the story that they've gone and being able to play either true to that character or to be just slightly adjacent to it, but still within the spirit of it. Mm-hmm. And then like with your own created character, what you do, your original, you get to do anything. You get to be that character fully. You define their background. You define their world. You define their hopes, dreams, desires. And you let that influence the world that you're being run in. And that can even happen in established canon. Like if you have an existing character if you have an original character that goes into an existing canon, that character may or may not know too much about what's going on in that world and then has their own perspective about it because they've never been a part of it up until that point or have only been a part of it tangentially. I like both. To me, original character in either an established setting or an original setting is the way to go for a campaign.
Yes.
And for one-shots or convention-style games, maybe one or two sessions, depending on how it goes, I like the existing world. And with the existing characters. Now, I have run an original setting, original characters, because I did an anime superhero game at Origins 6 or 7 years ago that was based off of an anime called Tiger and Bunny that I saw. And I took that concept, made my own characters for it, and my own spin on the world from that, and let my players run wild in it. And I actually had people show up that were like, I don't know what this is. This sounds interesting to me. And they had a great time playing all new original characters that they had no idea what they were stepping into. So.
Yeah. Years ago when I was running superhero games at cons, I did a lot of, I had my own set of teenage superheroes that I had created in their own kind of setting. And I would run those. And then later on I was running Masks, which is, a Power by the Apocalypse system where people would create their own characters based on certain archetypes. But for cons, I absolutely love, like you said, getting to step into the shoes of a favorite character and getting to kind of bring them to life. What are your thoughts, Jared?
So I've run the breakout event from Marvel Heroic multiple times, which is, you know, multiple acts of a thing. So it's not necessarily one night. It's not like one convention, you know, plot that you would be running that in. And I ran part of the Civil War event that they did for that. Some people are not going to want to change an established character. No matter what you tell them about making it their own, they're just not going to want to change them that much. So let's say they get married to Mary Jane. They're going to sell their marriage to Mephisto because they need to set things back the way it was at the beginning.
I find that the knowledge of characters in setting can be both a boon or a bane to running a canonical game.
Absolutely.
I do think, though, comic books and superheroes are unique in that some people can really buy into you saying, this is Earth 19773579. Everything you know about this character may be true, but you don't have to worry about anything that's going on right now from this point on.
Yep.
And then those people will be able to get married to Mary Jane and settle down and raise little Mayday. I am not still hurt by one more day. I am fine, okay? But I mean, the reason I ran my DC game in the DC setting, it's like you said, Andy, we had original characters, but I wanted to, and it was a long term, you know, it was over a year long that we were playing that game, but I wanted to use the DC setting because I love the locations and the villains and the organizations. I wanted them to be able to interact with Amanda Waller. I wanted Lex Luthor to be plotting things. I wanted these things. I hadn't seen the movie yet, so I wanted them to run into Black Adam. So there's all of these things that are great in that toy box, which are why you want to use the setting, even if the players are going to be running their own characters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what are some of your favorite systems for running superhero games?
I mean, we've talked about it a lot. It's the primary one that I use. It's Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition. I did a little bit of work in 2nd Edition right before 3rd Edition came out, but not a whole lot. I like the Marvel system that came out just in the last couple of years. I don't mind that one. I haven't had a lot of opportunity to play it. But going back to the early 2000s when I was in college, there was the Marvel Universe role-playing game. It was the ones where you moved the stones around for power, your karma, to be able to use things. We had our weird little college groups that everybody wanted to play something different and weird, and that was the system we picked up. We're like, yeah, we can do this, and I ran it, and I literally had one guy play as Carl from Aqua Teen Hunger Force, but as a as a telepath. He never got out of his lounge chair. He just levitated it around as they went on adventures, and I mean, that lasted like 4 or 5 games because nobody was very serious about it, but it was still a lot of fun. That system was interesting and different than anything else I'd run up to that point, so I liked that one.
What about you, Jared? What are some of your favorites for running superhero games?
So I ran that DC Adventures, which is basically Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition, for over a year, and then I played in several Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition. I really do like the system. It is a little bit more crunchier. As a GM, I got a little tired of having a couple players who always wanted me to rebuild their powers for them because they couldn't learn how to actually do things, which is not a thing you have to worry about in some other games. I absolutely love Spectaculars, which is, it's so hard to explain. It is a boxed RPG where you get a tray and you pick different cards and you build your character from these cards, and that is what your character is. So you can pull from decks of powers and secret identities and professions, and by the time you're done pulling all of these things, there's like a core sheet on there, and that's your character. I ran this a couple times. We were about to start a campaign, and that's when COVID hit.
Ooh. Yep.
Always.
But I really liked Spectaculars. It is, though, it is very component heavy, so it is hard to run online, which, you know, is kind of sad because then we went into several years where everything was online.
Yeah.
My absolute favorite, one of my favorite RPGs of all time, is the Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, which was the Cortex Plus game. I just love it. It was so weird because the first time I read it, it didn't make sense. And then once it did make sense, that's all I ran. I ran that at conventions for every slot for a long time because I loved how basically, instead of worrying about exactly how many points and how much damage something did, it was like, if something is an important part of this character, it's a D12. There was something about that simplicity that I really kind of liked about it. It's still, to this day, it's one of my all-time favorite RPGs.
I've spent a lot of my early time as a GM playing, running Mutants and Masterminds 2nd Edition. I kind of wandered away from that. I did 3rd Edition for a little bit, but I kind of wandered away from it because while certain friends of mine get angry when I say that it's crunchy, it's not so much that it's crunchy, but it's complicated. There's a lot of moving pieces. It is nothing like the crunch of the 90s Champions or the Hero System or anything like that. But it's got a lot more moving parts than I'm comfortable with as a GM. So I moved into running Masks for several years because I had a thing for Powered by the Apocalypse games. And Masks hits that sweet spot of Young Justice and New Mutants that I absolutely adore. And then more recently, I have been running Savage Worlds Superhero Companion. I had a campaign I ran last summer for my local group, and I've got an ongoing campaign I'm running for friends once a month right now. So those are kind of my sweet spot. I did play, there's one we played, Jared, that we didn't mention, which was the Sentinels one.
That has a lot of the Cortex DNA to it, and also maybe a little bit of Fate. It's the Sentinel Comics RPG, which is based on the Sentinels of the Multiverse card game, which has had a billion expansions. That is very much in the same vein as, if you've ever looked at Green Ronin's catalog, how deep that setting is, it is like an actual comic book universe because there is so much stuff and so many different people in different eras. The Sentinel Comics is very much that same thing. Like, there are decades of comics that they have plotted out to where in this fictional universe, these comics happened before these comics and this split off from this. If you ever want that feeling of something that is that has the same kind of depth as DC or Marvel, but it isn't really, that is one of those things that you can look at. And it does have a lot of that diurating thing. It has a thing where certain powers don't trigger until you get later in the scene, so that things are getting kind of desperate before you get to use your really, you know, major powers. It's really interesting. Though what's funny about it is it's not mechanically hard to run, but sometimes it is hard to frame things so that everything feels right to hit that green, yellow, red resolution that it moves through.
I found the encounters were really well put together, but the game didn't really provide support for playing outside of the encounters.
Yeah, we're going to do some scientific research now. Okay, what do we roll? I don't know.
Yeah.
I hate it when that happens.
And also to throw that out there, Ange and I got to play the Marvel Multiverse. I like the game, I just haven't gotten to play it enough yet. But someday we need to talk Chris into letting us do a sequel to our She-Hulk and Venom team up.
It was fantastic. So much ridiculous fun. So any last advice on running superhero RPGs? Jared?
So I am always a big fan of immersing yourself in media that will help you fall into the tropes more naturally. Even if you don't want to sit down and read comics, we live in a golden age of being able to find superhero media to immerse yourself in. You can almost trip over it without even trying. And that's one of those cases, though, where you, as we said, when we're talking about the different genres, you need to find something that's going to be in that right same headspace. If you are going to be running that street level game, watch Daredevil. Get used to seeing a hero that is beat all to hell all the time, constantly. Poor Matt. Anyway. And the other thing I would say is, a lot of people will say that superheroes are a power fantasy, and I do not think that's wrong, but for some people, the power fantasy is, I can use my powers to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget that part of it.
Yeah, it's not just being strong and being able to fly and lift things. It's also like, I can make a difference in the world. I can help people. So Andy, what's some of your last advice here?
I mean, Jared mentioned this a little bit earlier, but making sure that when people come to your table, especially if they're very familiar with the source material that you've put out, that they are aware that this is your interpretation of characters or certain events, and that their information is valuable. Their enthusiasm about the character, about the setting, is important and wanted, but you want them to know that not everything's going to be relevant to the story that you are telling them. You want to set the expectations for what that is, so that if somebody comes in and is playing Batman, they know which Batman they're playing. Are they playing Michael Keaton? Are they playing a Frank West Batman? Are they playing Adam West Batman? Because that could be a whole different genre, just in three different types of either actors or written types of Batman.
Yeah, that is one of the interesting things about comic books, is so many of them have such a long history. And there are some people who like to think of it, it's just one continuity. It's not really. I mean, they may try and keep it as one continuity, but these characters change, and different periods of the character are different from other periods of the character. So.
Also, if you sit down at a table and play Captain America and you play him like Ultimate Captain America,
geez.
I'll be very sad.
Please don't do that thing.
Please don't. Yeah. Please don't play Ultimate Cap.
My last advice here is, nail down the specifics of the type of game you want to run. Figure out where your sweet spot is, whether it's street level, you know, street level with a little bit of vigilante, or street level with a little bit of organized group, or cosmic with a little bit of organized group. It's like, figure out where your sweet spot is so you can help the players make the characters that will fit in that tone that you're going for. Lean into your genre tropes. We're here for the comics. Don't worry too much about reality specifically. You know, you want to have a level of verisimilitude with the game you're running, but you also want to lean into the tropes. And don't forget to lean into some of the non-fighting aspects of the game. A lot of these characters that we love and adore, while we enjoy their fight scenes, sometimes it's the non-fighting that makes us adore them. you know, their relationships with each other, their relationships with the world, all of this stuff. I mean, like, I love the Bat Family because of their relationships together, not just because they can go out and fight crime in Gotham. So, getting us out of here, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You can Patreon backer by following the Patreon link at the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this, and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, so if you're enjoying us, here's another show you should check out.
Heroes of Hovel's Way. Looking for an epic fantasy adventure between two best friends and their raccoon pal? Check out the D&D audio drama actual play Heroes of Hovel's Way. Join Aramon, the Dreaming Paladin, and Odie, the Starlight Druid, as they travel the barony of Kastakhan to fight dirt. Join them as they battle the Slurg monstrosities of Valhall Morris, the Titan of Earth. What? The raccoon? His name's Monty. He talks, and he loves baked goods.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, along with GnomeStew on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Threads. Folks, is there anything else you want to give a shout out to today?
So, since I brought up Spectaculars before, unfortunately, the box set is sold out. They are doing a Kickstarter for another game, which is going to be like a cyberpunk heist style game. That's going to be one of those box sets, and I'm kind of hoping that when they do that, they might reprint Spectaculars again. But in the meantime, if you're running any superheroes game and you are making an original setting, you should pick up the Spectacular setting book, because it sounds like it's just one of the books that it's in there, but what it actually does, there's no mechanics in it, but it asks you different questions about different parts of the game. Like, what is the main city in your universe? What time period is this set in? Is there an organization that monitors superheroes? Is there magic or is all superpowers based on science? When you answer these, there are little prompts that will take you to another section of the book, because once you say yes, there's an organization that monitors superheroes, you go to that section, and then there's a whole section where it's asking you about that organization. Is this a government international organization? Is it like a secret cabal that is, you know, keeping track of superheroes? I love this thing. It is so great for just, you know, there's so many prompts in it to make you think of things that you might not have thought about. This is actually something I use this not only in my Spectaculars game, but I use this in my Masks game to help set up what the world looked like too with my players. So I think you should go and get that PDF from DriveThruRPG, and we'll have a link in the notes.
Andy, anything you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I will absolutely give a shout out, and to anybody that's listening to this after June, sorry, this won't matter to you all that much. But like I said at the beginning, I am the event organizer for Matinee Adventures. We are running 53 games at Origins this year in June in Columbus, Ohio. So if you are at all interested in coming and playing in any of our games, which will run the gamut from superheroes to samurai to cyberpunk and everything and almost anything in between, make sure you go over to tabletop.events and look up Origins Game Fair and join us in Columbus for that.
I believe they're talking now about event registration going live in later April?
Yes, I believe it's mid-April. The event list is supposed to go live towards the end of March to allow people plenty of time to get their lists of games together.
Yes, we'll very much need to do that.
Yes. Oh, and I should also plug the Untold Stories Project, of which I am a cast member of. I mentioned that at the beginning. You can find us on the untoldstoriesproject.com or over on Twitch for Tuesday and Wednesday night live streams, usually. We're recording this on Wednesday when I don't have a stream. And then there are some podcasts that are out there as well, usually where podcasts are available. But I'll get a link to go along with everything here.
We've had Alex on the show before as well, yep. So you will have remembered his voice too. For me, be on the lookout for some Kickstarters coming from Pinnacle this year. Coming up soon, Tracy Sizemore will be kickstarting her Han cluster setting, which I have played and was really wonderful. I highly recommend it. And I have heard really strong rumors that there will be a Kickstarter for a Suede version of East Texas University, which I am incredibly excited about because that is one of my all-time favorite Savage World settings. So, as I sit here like a supervillain steepling my fingers, do you think you've been good enough to stay out of the stew?
If not, my personality is backed up on Cerebro, so they can grow me a new body on Krakoa. Nothing could possibly happen to Krakoa, right?
If it didn't, you're going to have to try to catch me first, because I've got all the superhero gadgets that will let me get away.